Red Line.
The French authorities' decision to demolish the major migrant camp known as the Jungle and disperse its varied asylum-seeking inhabitants has rocked France and sparked controversy all across Europe. This is what we are going to discuss in our second section, Between the Lines, analyzing the most thought-provoking publications of the week. An article titled, Sooner or Later, the Calais Jungle Will Be Back and the British Left Can't Wait, written by Nicholas Farrell and carried by The Spectator, the author sarcastically remarks that, at last, those poor migrants will have a decent roof over their heads while they finally get round to applying to the French government for asylum, as nearly all are required to do by the law. But no. He continues by writing that, instead, the British left and the French right, joined in unholy alliance, are outraged. How dare François Hollande do such a thing? Britain, not France, must take the Calais migrants, they insist, because that is where they want to go. Farrell finally concludes that, those who refuse to leave the jungle will be arrested, say the police, but no migrant remains in jail for long. They also say that once in the reception centers, the migrants must claim asylum within an as-yet unspecified period, or else they will be deported. Few ever are. Because of this, he warns, sooner or later, the jungle will be back. What fantastic news that will be for the British left and the French right.
Andrew, this is really very witty article, full of bitty irony. I enjoyed every minute reading it.
Me too.
But that was not the only publication, as you understand. That's a hot-button issue which is discussed, widely debated by leading European media, not only in France and in Britain, but also in other parts of European continent. If you ask my feelings, I would say that the whole story of Calais Jungle deserves shooting a movie on human drama, on agony and despair of those people who probably could have been cream of humanity, but realize that they're downtrodden of earth living in jungle. And today conflicting reports are coming from the place because, as you said, the bulldozers of democracy are working hard. Some are saying that the game is over, whereas alternative sources report that still some people are there. So I'm trying to figure out what's going on there. And I imagine that the ghosts of those refugees, or like stray dogs, they are wandering over the debris of what could have been their makeshift home. And the main question, I think, which all of us has to ask ourselves, and probably Europe the first has to answer this question, was formulated by another publication in Independent, with a story which came under the title The Calais Jungle Should Never Have Existed. So, and the question is, let me quote, why has Europe allowed the creation of a class of untouchables with no nation keen to process them? I think that this is the basic point for our discussion.
Yeah, I think that, I hate to say it, but I mean, these migrants are turning into a political hot potato. Nobody wants to take ownership, and it's really sad. So we're going to begin by speaking with our in-studio guest, Mr. Sergei Asnobyshev. He's director of the Institute of Strategic Assessment here in Moscow, to tell us more about this.
Well, I suppose that the principal question that unites this discussion with the first part of our meeting is the importance of power. Attempts to take over Mosul is the importance of power. Here we see the same, that it was not, nothing was done timely. The humanism of Europe, so to say, allowed all this, well, it is not crowds, it's a wave, tsunami of people that came to Europe, allow them to come. But no organizational, deorganizational matters were, undertakings were done, and preparations. And all these people, they lived for, now it is obviously seen on the TV screen, they were living in awful conditions. Do this united great Europe can offer some normal conditions for these people? Could it be done for not for a month perhaps, but perhaps for a year? For there are more than a year there, and everything is just disgusting as it is. So this is importance of power, and this another topic that unites us with other parts of our program is that, again, these attempts to do something with Calais, they are undertaken almost on the eve of the re-elections in France. So the President Hollande wants to demonstrate the decisiveness that he's doing something, that his party is thinking about. They should think about it a little bit earlier. And of course, in a philosophic way, if to take philosophic background of this, the past strikes, the past mistakes of the Western civilization strikes back. All these people, they part of them are coming from the former colonies and from Africa, Asia. These were the colonies of the now not very great, but in the past great countries. And all these people, they come, they demand for what was what the present generations were deprived of: normal living, normal relations, humanistic attitude to them. And this is very important. They are lacking it, and the case of Calais shows that they will be lacking it in the future too.
Yeah, I mean, these are definitely some pretty profound thoughts. Thank you for sharing them with us, Mr. Osnobyshev. We're going to move along to our first guest in the line to tell us more about this from a British perspective, and that's Mr. Martin Bentham. He's Home Affairs Editor of the London Evening Standard from London.
Red Line.
Hello, Mr. Bentham. How are you?
I'm very well, thank you. How are you?
Oh, no, I'm doing pretty good, thank you. You know, we're discussing the situation with Calais, and we're just trying to get from you, I mean, what is the UK reaction in the post-Brexit reality? Because obviously all these individuals, they want to make their way to the UK, but they're probably not going to be welcome. Now they're kind of dispersed all across France. So what's going on? How is the British public reacting to it? And what do you think will happen next?
Well, I think actually this, in a sense, this is nothing really to do with the Brexit debate, incidentally. This has been a problem that's been in existence for, well, obviously the Calais camp for several years, and there was one in the area before that as well, because this is a sort of recreation of one that was removed in Sangatte about years ago, 15 years ago almost. So we've been around this circle before. I think the reaction of the British people is, of course, on one hand, we are very sympathetic to people who have, you know, experienced terrible suffering in their own countries. There is, on the other hand, a great concern, has been a great concern about the situation in Calais, because what has been happening is that, of course, people have been trying to jump onto lorries. There have been, you know, even attacks on drivers coming through. It's also been the case that there are doubts about whether all these people are indeed legitimate refugees rather than they're economic migrants. And so there's a concern there that the people who just want to come to this country because they are, you know, want a better life, which we can understand from an individual point of view, why they might want that. But those are the people there, not necessarily the people in most need of fleeing from sanctuary, fleeing from conflict and so on. Of course, there are those people. And we've seen, you know, 200 and more children. We'll have some more coming to this country still, who have the refugee status, who will be given refugee status in this country because they have come from those type of places and are vulnerable and in need of protection. So on the one hand, there's a desire to help people who are generally in need, particularly the children. On the other hand, there's a view in this country, I think, that actually what you can't have is just an ever-increasing number of people arriving, waiting day by day, risking their own lives, risking the lives of other people to try to enter the country illegally.
Martin, of course, Britain is fortunate that it has a natural border, but it's not enough. If people are motivated, if they want to go, they can find 1,001 ways to penetrate into Britain. So my question is there any coordinated effort which is taken by British and French government? I read in media that there's some what is described like English wall, some barricade erected at the border. So is there something like that?
Well, yes, there's been an enormous amount of money and effort spent in the last year or two, millions and millions of pounds that this government has given, and the French, of course, have spent money themselves. And if you go to that area, I was there myself a few months ago, actually visiting the camps and so on. And also, of course, if you just travel on a Eurostar train from England to France or the other direction, when you get there, the railway line and the roads, there's great big fences trying to stop people jumping onto trains or lorries as they arrive at the Channel Tunnel. So, yes, there is a very big effort going on there. And, of course, although people will try to find a way, the problem about the Calais camp has been, and I think both the French and the British accept this, that, of course, if you've got people just sitting there waiting in a position where they're right on where the border is, in effect, and right in a position where they can day in, day out, try to jump onto trains and lorries, then that's not a very satisfactory situation at all. That is the route. Of course, there are other potential ways. People can try to get in on boats and obviously try to get onto planes even and use false documents to get onto planes, but that's much harder to do. So this has been a sort of weak link in a sense, and I think that yes, there's been an enormous amount of effort that's continued to secure that area and to stop a repetition of this, because obviously one of the concerns is that as I was saying before, we've had this before where we had a camp in that area and that we've been closed down and then it's sort of regenerated with the latest jungle camp, and obviously there is a concern that somehow or other that might sort of manifest itself again in the future, although of course there's great effort by the French in particular to prevent that happening, and they are insistent it won't happen, so we'll obviously have to see that.
Okay, thank you very much for telling us about this. That was very informative, Martin, and we're thankful that you came on the show today. Thank you.
Red Line.
On the line with us right now is Mr. Paul Sanders. He's a French-British historian and professor at NIOMA Business School from Paris. Okay, Paul, we're debating about who actually wins here when it comes to the Calais demolition, and some say it's the French right who wanted to get rid of the immigrants, while others argue that it's the British left who wanted to gain more sympathy for them. So where do you stand on this debate?
I'm not sure anybody's winning here. I know who's losing. It's probably the refugees. I'm not sure one can really frame this in terms of a win-win situation. What's happening is that obviously there's two factors that are more important than others. The first thing is the French presidential elections next year, where if the jungle, what it was called, continues in Calais, then this will, of course, be exploited by the extreme right in the upcoming elections. So the best thing is to have solved this problem in some way or another, even if it means distributing people across the country. Anyway, if you look at it from a media point of view, then this makes perfect sense, because it's so easy for the media to focus on something like the jungle. But if these 10,000 people who were there are being distributed in centers across the country, then there will be a lot less media attention on that, of course, because they will be distributed across the country. So it's the French presidential elections, first of all. And then secondly, also, of course, the British and the French side, they have reiterated several times that they are on good working terms despite the Brexit. But do we know whether this will continue or not? Maybe at some point in the future, the issue of the border control in Calais will actually be put back onto the table and will be used in the Brexit negotiations. Yeah. And that, I think, is also a very important factor one needs to take into account in order to understand what's going on here.
Yeah, I mean, those are some pretty interesting points you touch upon. So I kind of wanted to expand a bit and ask you about, with this controversy surrounding Calais, I mean, is it more about the left versus the right? Or is it, as some say, more about some European states versus others? Because just as this camp has come to symbolize the immigrant crisis, it's also come to symbolize the EU's internal divisions, too.
Well, I'm not sure why I'm sharing this analysis, because, of course, France has always played something of a, I might say, dissenter's role within. If you look at the position that was adopted by the Germans, the French never really went along with that. So the French example needs to be looked at per se. It's not really a symptom of anything. The French always do things their way. So I wouldn't really put that so much into the context of the current refugee crisis in Europe. This is much more something, in my opinion, Italy is much more tangibly touched by this, yeah, directly. The jungle has existed for many years. This has been a problem that's been around for a very long time. By closing parts of it or by restricting access to parts of it, the French authorities have only exacerbated the problem. For example, at one point, the area that was occupied by the jungle was twice larger than it was when it was dissolved. I would definitely see a case for arguing this in the context of British-French relations or British-European relations, but then you always need to bring back the French context, and that is presidential elections next year, which will probably be won by a right-wing candidate. Not the extreme right-wing, but the conservatives.
Okay, well, the last thing I want to ask you then is what you think is going to happen in the future. I mean, if we look at these immigrant trends, do you think that the French government, or for that matter, more European governments in general, will try to disseminate refugees and asylum seekers into many different facilities? Or do you think that more jungles might just pop up in the future where all these people kind of conglomerate in one space?
Yeah, I think one needs to look at this from the electoral point of view. This is something now that has been solved, but hasn't really been solved, because the underlying problem hasn't been solved, and it can't be solved. It's the refugee crisis. It's the fact that millions of people all over the world are leaving the places where they lived before for various reasons. in many cases for reasons of war or dictatorship. They're fleeing that and they're coming to Europe, among other places. So, yeah, we've seen a cosmetic change now. The jungle doesn't exist anymore. But they will, of course, make sure that it doesn't happen now within the next couple of months again, yeah? But who knows, once a new president is installed, then it could, of course, pop up again because the underlying problem has not been solved in any way.
Yeah, I think he has some pretty profound points there, how we really have to look at the root cause of all this instead of tackling the symptoms, and that we need to look at this through the perspective of presidential politics as well in France. So, Paul, thank you very much for speaking with us today. It was a pleasure to have you on our show. Thank you.
Thank you.
Okay, Sergey, you know, we're going to wrap everything up right now, and I think that when we look at Kalai, it is such a symbol. It has been a long, enduring symbol, and even though it's dismantled, what it stands for will still permeate in the European consciousness, because at the end of the day, even though it's out of sight, it is definitely not out of mind.
I think that this is a tragic story, tragic even in the name, that in the very heart of Europe, we have a jungle which bears strong reminiscence of colonial culture and of Rudyard Kipling and of India and Sri Lanka and other parts of Indian subcontinent, but not France, of course. So to put it in a nutshell, I think that Europe needs a sea change in the way it approaches mass migration. If that not happens, then, as your story says, Europe will witness another Calais jungles.
Yeah, and it might be fantastic news for people that are trying to exploit it. So we're going to thank everybody for taking part in our program today, beginning with our in-studio guest, Mr. Sergey Asnobyshev. He's director of the Institute of Strategic Assessment here in Moscow. We also spoke to Mr. Martin Bentham. He's home affairs editor of the London Evening Standard from London. And last but not least, we have Mr. Paul Sanders on the line. He's a French-British historian and professor at Neoma Business School from Paris. Following in our program, we have Nicolas Maduro, Commander, and Coup. Stay with us.